There it is.
Huge congratulations to Circle for being crypto's second biggest IPO. Coinbase is the first. They didn't technically have an IPO, but details. So we have our second big United States company going public and trading, Ryan. First, Circle shares were sold in the IPO at $31. $31 the day before. Do you know what Circle is trading at right now, about 1 hour into trading?
Okay, I saw something about this, but it's significantly up, right? So, I don't know, has it doubled?
It has more than doubled. I'm looking at it right now. It's trading at $88.50. It also hit a peak high of $103, which is just crazy. So, almost a tripling out of the gate. A tripling out of the gate of the evaluation of Circle.
I can't load this chart. It's like it's breaking the charts, David.
It's from the charts broken. Just type in CRCL. And that's the ticker of the Circle Internet Group, Inc. Apparently, that's
Circle
the company name.
Internet Group. Okay,
trading on the NASDAQ.
Wow, just a green line straight up. Huh?
Big green line. Yeah, you're going for a weekly candle. And let me tell you, it hasn't been trading
for a
week.
I'll do the, how do I do? Shorter time range.
Click the W and go down to 1 minute. There you go. $20 billion is the valuation that Circle is trading
at. That's crazy.
People were initially pricing it at around $6 or $7 billion, currently trading. I mean, we're 1.5 hours into trading. So, you know, who knows? But it's coming in at $20 billion.
They got to feel smart for like rejecting the Ripple offer, rejecting any Coinbase offers in the $6 to $9 billion range and just going with his IPO. It's like, you have a lot more shareholder value here.
Yeah. Well, so far, they still have like lockups and all that kind of stuff. So things still need to play out. But yeah, they're coming in at a juicy, juicy valuation, which, I mean, this sets the tone. This sets the tone. A lot of people are saying, oh, this is now going to be the starting gun for a variety of further crypto IPOs. I think people are looking at Kraken.
David.
There are other companies that people are looking at. Everyone's talking about Bankless going public.
No one is talking about that.
Valuation.
You know what they are probably talking about after our episode last week? They're probably using the word stablecoin summer to describe this price action, okay? I told you it was going to be stablecoin summer. And you said, how can people make money on stablecoins? The answer was right in front of us this entire time. They just had to buy stocks.
Yeah, I'm seeing people's screenshots of their IPO purchase requests in Robinhood and other venues. And they only got like 1/3 of it filled, 1/2 of it filled. But if you got any amount of Circle stock in the IPO buy, you are up like 2x. So congratulations.
Are you surprised that there's this investor appetite for this? Like, this is surprising to me.
It is a little bit surprising to me, and I'm like of two minds about this. Circle is just the only good, meaningful way of getting stablecoin exposure for TradFi. That is it's the only like valid conduit for stablecoin exposure.
But we've been telling them they could buy ETH. ETH is a stablecoin platform.
The most stablecoins are on ETH. Yeah, that's right. ETH is not available on the NASDAQ, though, and apparently that matters.
Okay.
And so, yeah, if you are bullish stablecoins and you would like to have exposure to stablecoins, you know, Circle is now trading on the NASDAQ, on the NYSE. And so that's a way to do that. And so maybe you can read into this $20 billion valuation, this 3x higher valuation than what people predicted, because Wall Street is just super bullish stablecoins, which we know they are. And that's what's happening. The other half of the story is like the story of Circle Economics, which I don't know if that totally is defensible
at a
$20 billion valuation, because their income, their profit was like 130 something million dollars over the last year. So how is $130 million of income justifying a $20 billion valuation? And they still have that Coinbase deal where they split like almost half of the revenue or something, or third of the revenue with Coinbase.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if the market's disconnected from reality. Maybe Circle has plans to like clean this up and make better economics. But I mean, I know when you compare this to Tether, which I would love to see Tether go public, but that's never going to happen.
Imagine?
Right. Because
like, I mean, for crypto natives, we've always looked at sort of the income statement of Circle versus something like Tether. And as you said, I mean, Circle, it's got all of these additional costs here, and it has to do this revenue share. It amounts to a net income of $156 million, even though they have how many, you know, billions in stablecoins out there?
Not 60. Only is 60 billion.
Not only is Tether like double that size in terms of the amount of stablecoins issued, it's also, I don't know, like 5-6 billion a year in terms of profit is just like a cash cow. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like the number of employees it has, it's like one of the most profitable companies in existence these days. And of course, it'll never go public in the U.S. markets. Yeah. But you can imagine if it did.
Yeah. But nonetheless, this is just a monumental event for the crypto industry. Like I said, it's the second big United States company to go public. The first IPO, Coinbase floated shares, which is like a different mechanism. Circle actually did an IPO. Jeremy Allaire tweeted out, "I'm incredibly proud and thrilled to share that Circle is now a public company listed on the NYSE under CRCL. 12 years ago, we set out to build a company that could help remake the global economic system by reimagining and rebuilding it from the ground up natively on the internet." So you also just have to sit back and reflect that this is just yet another huge milestone for the crypto industry. So congratulations to Jeremy Allaire and all of the Circle team.
Yeah, and I wonder if this will trade like based on the Genius bill and that going through Congress, if that will be reflected in the market price. And this is a good way to educate Wall Street on that. What's this take that you included here?
Yeah, this is from David at BlockWorks Research, I think. BlockWorks Advisory. Yeah, he says, "With Circle going public today, one thing that the entire world is underweight on is Coinbase's venture portfolio, specifically because he's calling out that there's a bunch of Coinbase investments that would not ever go liquid with a token, but instead will go liquid on the NASDAQ or at the NYSE." And so he thinks that this is also a starting bell for like a valuation of a lot of Coinbase's venture portfolio and generally venture capital. More companies, more crypto companies going public on public markets was always going to be good for VC. And he says that I wouldn't be surprised if Coinbase Ventures' non-token portfolio is valued at $10 billion in 2 to 3 years, now that the market is likely valuing it at zero today. I think the stock market, the traditional market, does not understand the value of Coinbase Ventures as a part of Coinbase equity.
Well, I know you follow Coinbase stock on a daily basis. Yeah. So was this up on the Circle IPO? Down?
Kind of. Not really. I mean, we're also dumping right now. I just got the notification that Bitcoin is below $103,000.
That's
so goodbye, James Wynn. You're out of here for the fourth time. Coin is down. It was up. I don't know if it's trading at any sort of relevancy to Circle right now.
We got a lot more to talk about on the weekly roll-up today, guys. Tariffs are back. Also, a tax bill deficits are causing some tension in this Elon and Trump relationship. Okay, I don't know if that chapter is coming to a close. We'll talk about that. And also how Ray Dalio thinks you should position your portfolio as a result of these tax deficits. We'll talk about that.
Ryan's going to bring you the very sophisticated macro takes. I, in contrast, have some macro memes for you, for all of y'all.
You're going to talk about the breakup, aren't you? Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the memes. I got some memes to show you. Pump Fund wants to raise $1 billion at a $4 billion valuation. But the real news here is that a token is confirmed, and I think an airdrop also confirmed.
Gotta be. You can't have a token without an airdrop in these times.
Yeah, at least Pump Fund needs to have an airdrop. And then also the Ethereum Foundation rolls out a new special forces team called Protocol, along with some strategic restructuring and also new information about their treasury policy. So we are now getting treasury policies from the EF, which is appreciated.
Yeah, and we got to talk about this too. Trump, did the Trump team launch a crypto wallet that Trump knows absolutely nothing about? This was the weirdest story of the week.
Which part of the Trump teams in the Trump universe is launching what product? We don't really know anymore.
We gotta figure this out, but we'll get to the bottom of it on this roll-up. David, there's a meetup coming up that you wanted the Bankless Nation to hear about. This is Beers with Bankless and Frax. When is this happening and where?
Yeah, so if anyone is coming to Permissionless, any Bankless listener that is coming to Permissionless, we're doing a meetup with Frax. That is in Brooklyn. Just
I like how
not
you said that.
Frax? Yeah?
Yeah. It's all like Frax. Emphasis on the FR. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. This is happening at Telea Beer Company. Great beer company. So we just rented out the place. We're going to have free beers for all you listeners out there who want to come and get free beers. And so there is a link in the show notes to register for the event. If you are a Bankless citizen or a Frax community member, you get priority access. And I will see you all at Permissionless.
Awesome. Tell me about markets, David. What's Bitcoin on the week? You said dumpage earlier. And I'm kind of scared to look at this chart, but I'm going to.
I think I need to go actually update my numbers. Looking at Bitcoin right now, $103,000, $150, down 3.2% on the week. Ether, Ryan.
What?
Ryan, what did you do last week?
What?
I believe you called for $3,000 Ether last week.
Yep.
We are looking at 2,567. Just a little bit outside. We are down 3.4% on the week.
This is
I got cocky.
All right. You were glowing me up. You were telling me about five week streak. Every week I've been back, ETH has been
up. You're supposed to be the cool-headed one.
I was super cool-headed, and then I just got overly excited, and in the moment, I blurted out 3K. I wasn't planning to do that. It just came out, and now look at us.
You tried to manifest a little too hard.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to be much more humble on roll-ups going forward, okay? And I'm not making a price call this week. It's kind of sad to see. What's causing this dumpage, David?
I don't know. I mean, dumpage. Bitcoin's at 103,000. So is that dumpage? I don't really know. But
Circle's up though. Like, I mean, are they selling their Bitcoin and Ether and they're buying Circle stock? Is that literally what's happening?
Yeah, everyone is dumping their assets to buy to pump Circle up to $20 billion. We got a total crypto market cap of 3.35 trillion, down like 1% from last week. But also we got a mover of the week. Oh, actually, we wouldn't call this a mover. We have a crypto token launch. We have these all the time. Yeah, we talk about them, we celebrate them when they're in the trad markets, but we get them all the time. Lagrange, which is a ZK coprocessor startup, coming in at a whopping $1.25 billion valuation. They just launched their token. For a ZK coprocessor, which is an extremely hard thing to like describe in a sentence.
Yeah, ZK coprocessor. I can barely say it. Explain that one. I thought infra was dead, right? This is sort of niche.
This is deep tech infra.
Ethereum infra, and it's already 1.2 billion?
Yeah, a coprocessor is like, you know how blockchains all redo their own computation and all the nodes do all their own computation. This is kind of like not that, the opposite of that, where you just have one person do the ZK computation and then you can just show your work around. And I think it's like more generalized rather than like we talk about this for enshrining the layer one as a ZK rollup, and that's how Ethereum will scale. And I think this is like similar to that, but more generalized.
Okay.
But you know, 20% float, so you know, 80% is still locked, but coming in at a $1.25 billion valuation. So congratulations to Lagrange and Lagrange investors.
Lagrange, I believe. I don't know. Tell me about these memes though.
Oh yeah, I got some memes for you. Okay, so you know the big beautiful bill that's going through Congress?
I do know that. And actually, okay, big beautiful bill. Mm-hmm. It's always in quotes whenever I read it. This is the tax bill that's going in Congress, okay?
Uh-huh.
I thought they were quoting Donald Trump, who's calling it the big beautiful bill. Do you know that's literally the name of the bill, David?
Yeah, it's literally the name of the bill. They're calling it the...
You knew this?
Yes. Yeah.
I had no idea. It's literally a congressional bill. It's called One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That's the name of it.
And so this is going through Congress. It's kind of like, I guess, Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump's budget. It's like a big deal. It's his proposed budget.
The bill is a meme in itself, like the title of the bill. It's just like, what are we doing here?
We could just unpack like all of the details of the bill. But that's the beautiful thing about memes is actually memes just really distill a lot of information here.
Okay.
So this is the Better Call Saul mill meme where he's just like presenting a board. Two people, and the board says, "We cut spending by increasing spending," and it's Donald Trump's face. And then if you go to the next meme, if you would, and it's Donald Trump showing documents to this interviewer. This happened, I think, in the Trump 1.0 era.
Confused.
He's like,
interviewer.
"I have a plan to cut spending," and then he shows the papers to the interviewer, and the paper says, "We're going to increase spending," and the interviewer is just super confused. And then here's Elon Musk. So this is when this becomes drama in the White House. So this is the train running into a school bus meme, and the school bus represents money that the Doge has saved the government. And then the train just ramming through that thing. It's Trump's big, beautiful bill. So apparently the Trump's BBB is going to add something like $2 trillion of budget.
I have the numbers.
Deficit. Oh, you have the numbers?
I have the numbers. I did the research for this section. You've got the
memes.
You've
done the research. I've got the memes.
But the memes are better. I don't even think I need to explain any details. It's literally what's happening. But okay, does this also imply some kind of tension in the relationship?
The Trump-Elon relationship is totally broken up.
Okay, should we play this? Trump, this is Donald Trump.
Elon is out. Besant is in.
I'm gonna play this clip. Okay, it's Donald Trump.
He said the most beautiful things about me. And he hasn't said bad about me personally, but I'm sure that'll be next.
He's talking about
Elon. I'm very disappointed in Elon. I've helped Elon a lot.
Yeah. I'm very disappointed.
I'm very disappointed. Yeah. Mm. And he did do a lot for Elon. He got into the Tesla. He shilled Tesla. He did that whole everything's computer meme.
Oh, brother. Elon did a lot for Trump, too, though. Okay. Yeah. And in fact, he was...
Did he, though?
Oh, yeah. He did. That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like, he did do a lot.
Elon's
he got him
taking
elected,
credit
yeah.
for getting Trump elected, basically. Yeah, in another tweet that I saw recently this morning, also getting Republicans both the House and the Senate.
Yeah, this is true.
See this tweet from Elon Musk about the big, beautiful bill. He's saying about the bill, I'm sorry, but I just can't stand it anymore. This massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill is a disgusting abomination.
Wow.
Shame on those who voted for it. Wow. You know you did wrong. You know it.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah. Holy shit.
Let's get a little spicy
fired.
Out there.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, so my big takeaway here is that,
okay.
other than the Elon-Trump drama, which is always hilarious, is that even despite Elon Musk, who is an insanely good operator, no one can argue that. He has made massive companies. He is a process engineer. He knows how to do process and organization. Elon Musk went toe-to-toe with government bureaucracy, tried to cut spending, tried to lean up the government, and lost big time. Like, did not actually save any money. And so if Elon Musk cannot get the government to lean up and be more efficient and save money, no one can. And without that, like, all Trump is doing is like, okay, you know what? F it. $2 trillion more deficit. And then meanwhile, I'm also going to issue a Bitcoin ETF with one of my companies.
Okay.
Bitcoiners are always right. Bitcoiners are always right.
That's another thing we should talk about. That is what he's doing. There's so much you could say about Doge. I mean, of course, Elon Musk he was doing the cuts in the executive branch, right? The existing mm-hmm. government operations. And the big costs of the future are really entitlement programs, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's like so he wasn't even tackling the things that needed to be cut. This big, beautiful bill, you are right. It would add $2.4 trillion to the deficit over 10 years' time, okay?
Right.
So because this bill has both tax cuts, right, which decreases U.S. revenue, and it also has spending cuts as well. And so if you kind of like add this together, it amounts to a $2.4 trillion deficit. The odds of it, so it passed through the House already, like the last week of May, and the odds of it getting past the Senate, they're saying, are about 50-50. There's four Republicans in the Senate who might flip over, not get it approved. But Trump wants it. And he's like, get it on my desk. I want to sign this thing by the 4th of July. This is the biggest tax cut and spending cut in history. It's a big, beautiful bill, right? So, I mean, like, did anyone seriously think any government from either party, Democrats or Republicans, was going to reverse the deficit problem that we have? Like, was there ever any hope of that? Was anyone ever serious about that?
I was hopeful. Yeah, I thought they started off this administration pretty serious about that. And I was like optimistic. It's like, okay, we're doing the pain thing, which if we're ever going to get back on track and have like fiscal responsibility, it's going to take pain. And like, that sucks. But I guess we're doing it. And I can't really complain because it's a responsible thing. And I was on board with that. And turns out, no,
it wasn't.
That's not,
it
that's
never
not
was. Yeah, I didn't think it would. Like, I was not as hopeful as you were, David. I was super bearish. I know that they were talking about it, right? But they wanted to appear like they were doing, not actually go through the pain. Did you see Ray Dalio's post about this? So he's coming out with a book, and he explains it this way. So he compares it to a household, and the U.S. right now, this year, revenue to the household is $5 trillion. That's what the U.S. makes in tax revenue, okay?
Right.
Expenses, the stuff it's spending, $7 trillion. So if you take, and plus, the U.S. as a household has a lot of debt out there, about $30 trillion of debt, or six times its revenue. And for actual households in the U.S., so if you're a U.S. citizen with a household, you are about $230K in debt. That's your portion of the $30 trillion of U.S. debt. Yes, you are a household.
$230,000 of debt?
Yes, that's yours. That's your
I'm
burden to carry.
I'm a United States citizen?
Yes, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah, and the annual interest on that debt is about $1 trillion, of course. And some of the debt comes due, right? Because it's debt, right. It's got a term. Yeah. About $9 trillion comes due in the next little bit, okay? And the hope of the U.S. government from a fiscal position is hoping that creditors or others will just like relend to them, renew the terms, keep doing it.
Which they have so far.
So Dalio says, he just sums it up. He's like, this is the current condition. That's it, right. David. 230K in debt. And, you know, what do you think he says? What do you think his portfolio prescription is for all of this? Knowing Dalio the way you know
not
him.
Bonds.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever.
Bonds.
He doesn't say Bitcoin. Did he say Bitcoin?
Yeah. Okay.
No.
So, yes,
I mean,
he
said Bitcoin before, so it's not the first time.
Can I give you
I would have expected
quote.
Him to go straight to gold.
I know, but I've been reading Dalio. He's been talking about this for years. Yeah. We've both been talking about it for, like, we've been
we
talking about
Dalio.
His stuff for, yeah.
Please come on the podcast.
He's gay. Yeah, sure. So this is what he says. I suggest diversifying well in asset classes in countries that have strong income statements. I don't know where you find those. And balance
yeah,
sheets. And not having great internal political and external geopolitical conflicts. Again, I don't know where you find those. Sorry, Dalio.
Yeah, what?
Underweighting debt assets like bonds. Basically, you know, he's saying bonds are shit.
Sell bonds.
And overweighting gold and... Wait for it. And a bit of Bitcoin.
A bit of Bitcoin. What
a
do you think he means by that? Do you think over or under 1%?
It's a bit, you know?
It's
so
a bit.
That's up for you to define. I mean, for some people listening, that might mean 50% plus. Just a little bit of your portfolio.
Just a little bit.
So
are we talking like Michael Saylor or above or below Michael Saylor's level of Bitcoin?
Come on, though. This is notable. I mean, we've been
this
doing this
notable.
Podcast for,
yeah.
for how long? And now mm-hmm. Dalio's, we've always been wondering, hey, how, you're in the gold train. Why are you not on the digital commodity train? There he is with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So
I remember in the 2021 cycle, we talked about Dalio a lot because that's when, you know, United States did the helicopter money and all that kind of stuff. And we were just saying, Ray Dalio, say Bitcoin, just say Bitcoin. And he was like, gold. And we're like, no. Yeah.
And then we would say, but he actually means crypto assets.
Yes.
He doesn't just mean gold. And sure enough, we were right. We just had to wait for it.
All right. Coming up next on the opposite side of Ray Dalio and macro, we're going to talk about Pump Funds getting ready to launch a token. And then Ethereum is in front of Congress this week. So what was said in front of Congress and who was representing? And also the SEC giving clarity on staking, ETH staking, what's downstream of all of that. But first, before we get there, we're going to talk about Uniswap, our sponsor. It's a browser wallet. It's a mobile wallet. It's the best place to do DeFi. Let's go hear from Uniswap right now. Uniswap is your gateway to a more efficient DeFi experience. With Uniswap, swapping and bridging across 13 chains is simple, fast, and cost-effective, helping you move value wherever, whenever. Thanks to deep liquidity on the Uniswap protocol, you'll enjoy minimal price impact on every trade. And now Uniswap V4 takes it even further. Swappers benefit from gas savings on multi-hop swaps and ETH trading pairs, while liquidity providers can create new pools at 99% lower costs. The best part, you don't have to do anything extra. Each trade is automatically routed through Uniswap X, V2, V3, and V4, so you get the most efficient swap without even thinking about it. Whether you're swapping, sending, on-ramping, off-ramping, or bridging, Uniswap's web app and wallet gives you the tools to unlock DeFi's full potential on Ethereum, Base, Arbitrum, Unichain, and more. Use Uniswap's web app and wallet for a more efficient way to use DeFi. Imagine verifying yourself without handing over personal data. No hacked databases, no unnecessary personal exposure for airdrops, and no AI bots ruining community governance. Meet Self, the on-chain identity verification protocol built for privacy and control. Self protocol uses zero-knowledge proofs to confirm your identity safely. Users prove key details like age or citizenship without revealing sensitive personal information. Self never stores your data. It only generates cryptographic proofs. Here's how it works in 3 steps. First, register and verify. Use the Self app to scan your biometric passport's RFID chip. Self verifies authenticity with zero knowledge proofs. Each passport creates one unique identity. Second, you can share proofs privately. Third-party apps request identity proofs, like confirming you're over 18. You can also link proofs securely to public wallets for airdrops or governance participation. And then last, secure verification. Apps validate your proofs instantly on-chain, like on Celo, or off-chain. Audited by ZK Security, the Self app is live on iOS and Play Store. Visit self.xyz and follow Self Protocol on X. Pump Fund wants to raise $1 billion via a token sale, which would include a public sale. So Pump Fund doing an ICO for a token at a $4 billion valuation. So they want to raise $1 billion. They want to grow a $1 billion treasury and launch their token at a $4 billion.
And this is an ICO, you said?
We're still looking for more details. I think what's happening is that they are just like talking to VCs, talking to potential investors, trying to find.
Is this coming from accredited investors, or is it going to be? Is there going to be some sort of a public sale? You think?
From what I'm reading, what I've heard, and also what is reported on by Blockworks, again, is also talking to what they said, two sources with knowledge of the matter. said that there is looking to be a public sale and an airdrop. There's a Twitter account who tweeted out, Pump Fund launching Pump Token in the next 2 weeks, airdrop for users confirmed as well. And then one person says, like, are you LARPing? Or give me sources. And then this Twitter person says, nope, source close to the team confirmed, seed investors already know. And so if they are looking to raise $1 billion, they're going around to investors in the space and showing like terms and talking about terms. And so that's how this would ultimately get to some news reporting agency like Blockworks. And so a loose confirmation of an airdrop, loose confirmation of a $4 billion valuation public sale. What do you think about $4 billion for Pump Fund? What do you think about
that? I was going to ask you the same question, David. And actually, okay, let me give you some more comps here first, and then get your answer in mind. But let's compare it to Circle, okay? They were hitting the bell earlier. So the app Pumped Off Fund has already generated $700 million in cumulative revenue. On a very small team. So you got to imagine the vast bulk of that is actually profit. And we said earlier, what's annualized Circle doing these days? 150 million. All right, versus let's call it, you know, 600 million in you know, annual profit for Pump Fund. Okay, Circle, what did we say? 20 billion? Pump Fund, $4 billion. Which is the better deal, David? Which would you rather buy today? You know, Pump Fund or Circle?
When you put it like that, wow, Pump Fund seems like really cheap. So the revenue for Pump Fund has come down. They made a lot of their money with their peak revenue was around the Trump meme coin launch, because that's when all meme coins just like went absolutely gangbusters.
Yeah.
Looking at more recent timeframes of revenue, Pump Fund has made $6.5 million of revenue over the last 30 days. And that annualizes out to $78 million if this Dune board that we're looking at is accurate. So $78 million.
That's less than Circle.
Let's say they have like $8 million of costs. Very slim team. Maybe it's less, maybe it's more. $8 million. They're making $70 million a year.
Sure. So durability of the revenue is a question, isn't it?
Yeah. For a $4 billion valuation at $70 million of revenue annualized, that there's a gap there.
Well, it depends what you think, right? So like, what's the moat? You know what Pump Fund kind of reminds me of, to be honest, like I'm not sure. So I am not convinced of the durability of meme coins. It's certainly durable this cycle, but and I think they will persist. Don't get me wrong. Meme coins will always be a thing, right? But I sort of think of Pump Fund as almost like the OpenSea of last cycle, right? You had NFTs, OpenSea was dominant, looked unstoppable. What happened? Well, NFTs went down. You had other competitors like Blur launch, do things a little bit differently, suck up some of that liquidity. And also the NFT market collapsed, right? Easy. Like, and so the dynamics around meme coins in crypto, you're taking some bets on the future here. And there's so much disruption that could happen in terms of like the market dynamics or new entrants. Yeah. It's really hard to think about like that versus buying a Circle. Not that we're seriously considering these two things, I suppose, but I just have questions about the durability of this lead and the durability of the space.
I think the comparison of Pump Fund to OpenSea in 2021 is one that many people are making. So we have a bullish tweet and a not bullish tweet. Vanna Charmer Mossy, he was on Chopping Block recently, great episode. He made that point of just like, this is more of a flash in the pan. This is more of a one-time meta. I'm not totally convinced. I think there's two ends of the spectrum here. There is 2021 OpenSea, which like raised at a $13 billion valuation at the absolute top. I don't think they could even be valued at like $500 million right now. So there's that end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is like, this is actually 2013 Coinbase. Actually, meme coins do have incredible durability across time. You know, Dogecoin has been around for a long time. Meme coins were not, you know, created by Pump Fund. Meme coins have been around. Pump Fund has really like captured it. And so it's actually much closer to 2013 Coinbase, in which meme coins are here forever. And there are meaningful attempts at dethroning Pump Fund. There's Believe, there's Virtuals, there's other
they
like
haven't
token
been
launchers.
Successful yet. Here's
they've had some success. I wouldn't say not success. And so there's actually going to be always a consistent interest in funding Pump Fund competitors because of the durability of meme coins. And so that's the bullish end of the spectrum. I'm somewhere in the middle. I think $4 billion is kind of rich. I don't think the 4 billion token is going to make any like investor at $4 billion valuation. You're not going to like 10x that.
Yeah,
you're not
going to
get rich off of that.
How do you get to 50 billion from that? How do you get to 100 billion on that? So this is the bullish tweet. It's been about 8 months now, and I hope you're starting to see the vision for where Pump is headed. They're going after platforms like Twitch and TikTok. Mm-hmm. It's only a matter of time before creators realize they can monetize far more effectively on Pump. That's the take.
That's
here.
Interesting. Placing Pump Fun shoulder to shoulder with Twitch and TikTok, I think, is interesting as a content platform where it's actually content first more than token first. I think that's really interesting.
The problem, though, is just like how much do you get from that if you're a creator? I mean, there is something extractive from your community about meme coins, or there certainly can be. And oftentimes the incentives lead towards shortcuts, extraction, people feeling burnt. Everyone wants to buy the meme coin so that it goes up, right? But when it goes down, it sucks.
No one wants
they
to collect the meme coin.
And
it's
they
not
hate
a, meme coins
you.
Are not collectibles.
Yeah. If you're a creator, you launch something, it goes up, you're amazing. It goes down, you're hated.
You are hated.
Get off the internet. They hate you.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's very volatile.
What do you think the aggregate market cap of all Pump Fun meme coins is? Like, if you add the market cap of all of them, add them together.
Just the Pump Fun ones, not
just
all the crypto.
Just the ones
coins.
Pumped on. Yeah, exactly. That's right.
I would get the ones like 5 billion, something like this.
Yeah, pretty
range.
Close. 4.5 billion. 4.5 billion.
So same as the market cap of the platform.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what that tells me. That's interesting.
It's interesting. I also don't know what it tells me. I think BNB. I posed this question to Twitter. BNB is actually like far worse in the sense that the valuation of BNB is massive.
BNB Binance Chain thing.
Binance Chain. Yeah, aggregate value of Binance Chain. You know, people call this a casino. Binance Chain is a casino. The value of all aggregate tokens on Binance is like 1/10 the value of BNB itself. But granted, Binance Exchange buys and burns BNB, and so you're actually investing in like Binance revenues too. So maybe it's not a very good comparison.
Real hard to compare Circle and BNB and Pump.
Yeah, let's compare Circle and Pump Fund shoulder to shoulder.
let's throw in a bank like JP Morgan. Compare that too. Well. Let's talk about the Ethereum Foundation update this week. So a protocol special forces team. All right. So some people saw this tweet from the Ethereum Foundation announcing protocol, and they were like, "What? Like, what is protocol? You
announcing
guys doing
protocol,
a new protocol?
Like question mark?
What is protocol?
Protocol. I think is just the name of a very slimmed down research and development team that has been categorized into three lanes. You know the Verge, Urge, Splurge. All those are gone.
Yeah.
There are now just three.
They're still there. We just don't
talk
about
them. They're still
there,
but like this is not what we're talking about. This is not how we're presenting it.
Sure.
What they are now is first track, Scale the Layer 1, led by Tim Baco and Ansgar.
Okay.
Second track, Scale Blobs, led by Alex Stokes and Francesco D'Amato.
Okay.
And third track, Improve UX, led by Barnabé and Josh Rudolph. And then Donkrad is the person orchestrating all of these things. So he's kind of like the head of these three independent teams. Each team is only two people, and then Donkrad is the guy at the top. And this is the Ethereum development team. This is the people dictating the next steps of the protocol.
Love it.
And the EF wrote in the blog post, "The process of shipping protocol is messy, asking us to respond proactively to demands that are hard to articulate and even harder to fulfill. This moment may be Ethereum's best shot at deploying not only our technology, but our values at planetary scale." And this announcement also came with a reduction in staff. And so there were layoffs from the Ethereum Foundation. Tim Baco wrote, "As a part of this reorientation, we have also revisited our team structures. We'll be doubling down on some areas and reducing efforts in others. This resulted in us deciding to part ways with some EFers whose skill sets no longer matched our priorities." So, remember when I'm going to invoke he who must not be named by the Ethereum community? That person is...
There's so many of them. Who are you about to say? There's so
Kyle
many.
Somani. Kyle Somani.
That's one of them, yeah, sure.
When we had him on the show, we were like, okay, Kyle, like, what do you think we need? Like, what does Ethereum need to do? And he goes, yeah, Ethereum needs to go into war mode. Like, there needs to be
Didn't he say
fires.
Fire people at
There needs
the
to be
EF?
Fire people, yes.
Fire
a wartime CEO needs to come in and needs to, like, people need to get fired.
Well, didn't he also say fire Vitalik? Somewhere else, or am I misremembering that?
Did he? Dude, I'd have to go back and rewatch. Anyways, I'm seeing Donkrad being elevated to a position of very strong leadership, people being fired, laid off, and the organization being restructured to be able to, as Tim said, ship code, ship technology at a planetary scale.
It's good.
That's what I'm saying.
I think this is good. This is like, you know, to me, this is Tomash coming in.
This is absolutely Tomash.
Yeah.
So is it Tomash?
He's bringing organizational, executional firepower, a thing that the EF, for all of its great things, and there are many great things about the EF, as a piece it was missing, to be honest. Not executing on things, particularly the roadmap, not having clear timelines, communication. And he's just putting names accountable and leaders accountable for specific deliverables. And these deliverables are exactly where Ethereum needs to go. And the technology is there. If Ethereum could just execute on this roadmap,
quickly,
like, things are going to go very well from here.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a big if, but I'm starting to see mounting confidence here. Right? Like this is a good sign to me. Scale L1, scale the blobs, improve UX. These are all the things that, and now we have a team that's executing on it. It's called Protocol.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I do these kind of high touch episodes that require like multiple guests being stitched together. And so I'm doing, Ryan, interviews with each of these teams for like 20, 25 minutes each, going to stitch them together.
Oh,
hopefully
cool.
Donkrad gets back to me on Telegram and says, yes, I'm down to be the co-host, because I'm going to get Donkrad as the co-host because he's the guy. And so I'm trying to make that episode happen. So bear with
me. I think that would be great. That would be a fantastic episode.
There's not the only news coming out of the EF. So the EF has also released a new treasury policy. So we're finally getting some clarity about the EF's treasury.
Because it has some ETH in its treasury.
It has some ETH in its treasury, yes. The big line, I think, we intend to reduce our annual OPEX roughly linearly over the next 5 years, ending at a long-term 5%. So the EF wants to spend just 5% of its treasury every single year, down from 15% where it is now. In addition to that, the EF will seek to earn acceptable returns on treasury assets. So they're going to invest, make their assets more productive. They both have stable coins and ETH as well. They're going to invest in a manner consistent with Ethereum's underlying principles, and also quarterly reports will be a thing. So we're going to get quarterly reports. With going back to that investing their ETH topic, they want to support nascent DeFi protocols to help develop privacy features, and they're going to deposit their Ether into DeFi protocols in order to get a yield, but primarily emphasize what they are calling DeFi punk protocols. So what's DeFi punk? I'm so glad you asked. DeFi apps that prioritize security, being open source, financial self-sovereignty. I think we would call that banklessness. Tech solutions over trust-based solutions. So no multi-sigs, no reliance on legal coercion as recourse. Active deployment of cryptographic tools to protect civil liberties. Not sure what that means. And then also privacy. So the EF is trying to make their capital productive by also leveraging what they are calling DeFi punk DeFi apps, which I think we would have always called these DeFi apps, but the word DeFi has kind of been diluted that they needed to remake.
Yeah, you got
to
call it punk
OG,
now.
DeFi, yeah.
that makes DeFi, sense, right?
DeFi punk is just DeFi 1.0.
We're just calling everything DeFi these days. Hyperliquid, that's DeFi, sure, right? That makes sense. I would say, just a refresher, how much ETH does the EF hold? Like, I'm just recalling this from memory. If someone were to make me guess, I would say it's pretty low compared to other foundations as a percentage of supply, right? Something like 1%. It might even be less than 1%. Now, that amounts to a lot of money because ETH is just so massive in terms of size, but it's not very much as a portion of total ETH supply.
Yeah. Yeah. If this Google search is correct, the foundation's total treasury is about $970 million, $790 million in crypto, and $180 million in non-crypto assets. I'm guessing that's dollars.
Yeah.
So less than $1 billion.
Yeah, less than $1 billion. They really have to make it last. I guess, you know, it's good, though, for them to like roll out these policies.
Quarterly reports is going to be really nice.
Yeah, I have a conspiracy theory.
I would like
to
challenge all other layer one foundations to issue quarterly reports about their financials.
Okay. Maybe they will, because I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory for you.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason the EF is doing more of this, transparency. I mean, there's lots of reasons, cultural change, all of these things, it's all good. They realized they woke up from their slumber, all of these things. Part of it, I think, is the SEC is no longer on their throat.
Oh, I definitely think that's true.
So they can actually add more leadership and more coordination in the space, including things like quarterly reports. In the past, if they did a quarterly report, you know Gary Gensler would point at that, bring it into a court case and say, he was already snooping around, trying to say that Ether, the asset, was a security, that the EF is kind of like a centralized corporation. And if they had a quarterly report of some kind, he would bring that. That would be admissible in court, and he'd use it against them. I think this is part of the reason we're seeing more leadership.
I think you're absolutely correct. There's also a story of like Vitalik is just not an operator. He's just not an executive.
True. That's true.
And so it's a little bit of both. You definitely see Tomasz fingerprints on this. But also on this one, Xiaowei, this is Xiaowei's work.
That's
so
great.
If we're going to tip hats to Tomasz, we also have to tip hats to Xiaowei.
Amazing. Let's tip a hat to Vitalik here, actually. This is him commenting on Ethereum layer one scalability.
How fast should we see a lot of these changes to the L1 that have been talked about in the last couple of months?
Yeah, okay. So my view is like generally I think we should scale L1 by about 10x over the next year and a bit based on delayed...
Why not be more ambitious here?
No, year would be great.
It's great just to see this reprioritization and this like can-do attitude of scaling the layer one just permeate around the Ethereum culture. I've been pushing for this for a while now. Like I went back and forth. Like last year, I was like, "Yeah, we need to scale the layer one." No, the path that we're on. It took me a while to like get dug into this.
Now you
like
have
we
conviction
need to scale
around scaling.
And I've been pushing different parts of the Ethereum community for the last like I don't know 2-3 months. I was in the Daily Gwei Discord like fighting with them, and they were like, "No, we can't do this. Like the engineers, you don't know anything, David, that the engineers don't know." And then you see the engineers start saying, "Yeah, we're going to scale the layer one." I'm like, thank you. It's just an attitude thing. It's just an attitude. We can do things.
There are some trade-offs with scaling too much, but I feel like the Ethereum researchers know they got the get out of jail free card now, which is ZK right. Tech is yes. really catching yeah. up.
Yeah.
And so that's going to allow massive scale here.
Yeah. 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 There was a conversation in the Bankless Discord from Centauri, one of our Bankless citizens, who said, to get a 10x increase in a year, we need to pressure larger operators to change the gas limit on their nodes. Which brings us to this tweet from Victor Bunin, who is a protocol specialist at Coinbase. And he says, hey, so Coinbase is once again one of the first large operators to signal the increase in gas limit. People used to bully us to go faster, but guess it's now it's our turn to bully others. So he tags Lido, P2P, Figment, Helm, Chorus, and say, yo, guys. It is time to increase the layer one gas to 60 million. Right now it's at 36 million. Let's get it up to 60 million gas on the layer one. So there are people from Lido who are listening. There are people from P2P who are listening. You are requested to pump the gas.
Let's do it. All right. We got a lot more coming up. David Saylor, Michael Saylor found a way to raise more money to buy more Bitcoin.
I'm shocked.
Yes, he did.
Which also, couch cushion did he look under this time?
Yeah, who knows? Did the Trump team launch a crypto wallet? Some say yes, some say no. Maybe we'll find
How
an answer.
How is that up for debate?
Also, David, SBF, his story, it's headed to Netflix. We're going to talk about who's playing SBF's role and also Caroline's role, of course, all that and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this possible, including Forex, which is, of course, a decentralized central bank, some of the best yields in DeFi. It's like Circle, Athena, Maker. They all had a baby together and they produced Frax. Go check them out.
In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and roll-ups. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Fraxtl's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol. It's a digital nation, powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use frax.com/r/bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards. Imagine if your checking account and DeFi wallet finally spoke the same language. That's Mantle Banking, an all-in-one fiat and crypto account. It lets you save, spend, and invest all from one dashboard. Swipe for coffee, stake ME3 yield, or even use virtual cards for payments through Apple Pay. So it feels Web2 simple, yet stays Web3 sovereign. For allocators, meet Mantle Index 4, the S&P 500 of crypto, a tokenized institutional-grade fund seeded with $400 million from the Mantle Treasury and balanced across Bitcoin, Ether, Sol, and yield-enhanced stables. One asset, broad exposure, pure DeFi composability. The momentum is real. ETH vaults, FBTC bridges, and a $2.4 billion community treasury are all powering the next phase of on-chain finance. Mantle brings real-world access, yield, and utility to digital assets. Ready for the next era of on-chain finance that actually belongs in 2025? Explore Mantle at mantle.xyz or follow mantle_official. Mantle, bridging TradFi and DeFi so you don't have to.
Tweet from Michael Saylor. Strategy today announced the launch of Stride. That's a ticker symbol, STRD. A new perpetual preferred stock offering available to institutional investors. All right, I thought Michael Saylor already had a stock offering, and that was called MicroStrategy, MSTR. Now he's got STRD that he's releasing. What's going on? Explain this.
Yeah, it turns out he also has STRF, which has already been trading for a while. So we were trying to understand what's going on here. So MicroStrategy, MSTR, is the common stock. And you know how like Pendle kind of unwraps tokens and allows you to express different ways
you're
of having
exposure.
You're trying
to explain complicated equity stuff to me in DeFi in crypto language. Yeah,
but yeah, it's a little bit like that. So if you are maximally bullish Bitcoin and you would like to express that bullishness with MST with MicroStrategy, you would buy MSTR. You would buy the common stock.
Sure.
STRF is a 10% like coupon, a Series A perpetual strife preferred equity. So it's this thing that exists in this like no man's land between equity and a bond, a corporate bond.
It's preferred. So if common stockholders get wiped out because something real bad happens,
right,
the preferred equity owners are able to
get paid out first.
They get paid out first.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. And so you as a STRF preferred strife preferred equity owner, you get paid a 10% coupon, a 10% like dividend yield, a fixed 10% cumulatively.
That's the benefit.
So if the board skips a payment because it doesn't make many money, it piles up and you will get paid that payment that you are owed later.
Okay.
It's at the top of the equity stack. So like you said, if this gets paid out first, it is the most safe, most defensible. This new thing that MicroStrategy is issuing is STRD, which is closer.
The third asset.
So he has MicroStrategy, he has STRF, now he has STRD, not yet trading. It's a 10% Series A perpetual Stride preferred. So it is junior. It also pays 10%.
Okay.
But if MicroStrategy cannot make a payment and it misses a payment, you do not get that payment. You do not get that payment later, unlike STRF.
Okay.
It's also junior. And so if MicroStrategy gets wiped out, you also get wiped out because now you won't be getting any more payments. And so this is like, it's a little bit sussing out the credit worthiness of MicroStrategy. So I think if something breaks in MicroStrategy, this thing will get wiped out first. Like this thing will go to zero first. STRF will go to zero last. And then MicroStrategy just trades like a company.
So the reason he's doing it is so that he can sell this new Stride shares, basically, and raise another, what, $250 million or so to go do what? What's he going to do with $250 million?
I don't know. You know, buy a few Bitcoins here and there. And so, yeah, he's got these two additional credit vehicles that he can sell more in. And if the market perceives him to be credit worthy, the price of these things will go up and he'll be able to sell more.
Okay. So for an investor, did I see Dylan LeClaire over here on Twitter call these kind of like junk bonds? It's the Stride is kind of like the junk bond version.
Yes,
it's
just the last, like, the most recent one that he issued. Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's junior. You're not getting the guaranteed payments. You know, it's like, I don't know. It seems maybe some investors will want this, but it seems the worst of a couple of worlds here, right? Because you're not getting a guaranteed payment.
He ends it in this really interesting way. He's issuing a 1,000-year USD Bitcoin swap and buying the Bitcoin up front. The balance sheet itself is extremely delevered. And so he's using whatever capital, whatever dollars he has to pay loans in order to buy Bitcoin up front so he can get it he can pull forward the future as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then sell that future into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then assuming that it appreciates.
It'll be totally fine so long as you don't get over leveraged. Mm-hmm. And so long as number keeps going up, it'll be totally fine.
Yeah.
I know that
so
for
So long
certain.
As number goes up. Even if number goes down, he's also still fine.
Probably
but like
fine.
He made a bad bet or a worse bet.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Trump, David. I saw a tweet talking about a new crypto wallet that the Trump team launched. I went to the website. This is kind of what you see on the website. All right. It's like trumpwallet.com. Guys, I don't know if you should go to this or not. Because I don't even know if it's real. I actually thought it might be
a phishing
campaign. Okay. It is real. Anyway, the news was, this came out of crypto media sources like Bitcoin Magazine etc., that Trump had launched a crypto wallet where you could buy, sell, trade. The Trump token was featured inside of the crypto wallet. And it was like the Trump version of a crypto wallet in case you like you're done with Uniswap and MetaMask wallets and you just like you wanted your Trump wallet, you know, because you got to hold your crypto in the Trump wallet. So that was the news. And then something funny happened, which was the sons of Donald Trump, Eric and Donald Jr., started denying that this thing was real. They denied affiliation with this whole thing.
And so the launch of the Trump wallet got community noted, saying the Trump organizations have distanced themselves from this.
Right. And so crypto media started reporting on this. Mainstream media started reporting on this. Funny, though, Magic Eden, it was originally an NFT platform, right? On Solana. Now they're maybe doing more things.
They started doing Bitcoin ordinals. They bought Slingshot wallet. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They said that this was real. In fact, they had helped develop this in partnership with Trump. Uh-huh. And when pressed, guys, hey, they're saying it's not real. The sons of Trump are saying this is not real. Magic Eden said, "Nah, it's real. This we really have a deal with the Trump organization." So I left this story here.
They said they are partnering with the Trump meme coin team,
which is, I mean, the same people.
Eric and Donald Jr. In Eric's tweet, he says that World Liberty Financial and that group, which he's a part of, has nothing to do with the Trump wallet, and that's not anything to do with any Trump organization.
Okay, but they do have something to do with the Trump meme coin, right?
But apparently, apparently this is a Trump meme. This is not a World Liberty Financial wallet. This is a Trump meme coin wallet.
But they implied Trump has nothing to do with it.
They said the Trump organizations have nothing to do with this.
But that's not quite true. Somebody in the Trump organization has something to do with it and did indeed roll this out.
Magic Eden, which is a legit company, is doubling down on the fact that this is real, and it would be ridiculous for them to like launch a Trump wallet without actually being able to claim that to be true. Here's Donald Trump Jr. saying the Trump organization has zero involvement with the WADA product.
Eric and I know nothing about it. They know nothing about it. So
what's the URL? Do you know what the URL is?
I thought it was trumpwallet.com.
I'm going to trumpwallet.com, and it is giving me a site cannot be reached. Maybe it's down.
The wrong URL.
Anyways, unrelated but also related. I saw this tweet from Molly White, which I think kind of explains everything. And it is a kind of like an org chart map of all of the different Trump entities and all of their crypto dealings. And
wow,
it kind of looks like spaghetti. And there's like an unknown associations and there's known associations. And so you got World Liberty Financial, you got the Trump meme coin, you got the Trump NFTs, you got the Melania NFTs. You have some people who are part of the Melania NFTs plus World Liberty Financial organization. You have other people who are part of the memes and then like different part of the Trump meme coin. It's just a kind of a mess. And so I kind of am not surprised that somebody in Trump's orbit and influence and part of his companies like goes and pioneers a Trump wallet, and a different part of the Trump crypto verse is like unaware of that happening, because I think they're all operating on under their own initiative and somebody just decided to make a wallet, and their other side of the Trump crypto verse is like, I didn't know about that.
That must be it, right? The website and the offering said it was the official Trump wallet and the official, like, you know, Trump meme coin wallet endorsed by Donald Trump. They said this explicitly. This is the president of the United States, right? As like a big media empire, world's most powerful man, you wouldn't want to put that out there.
No way.
If you didn't really have some sort of permission there.
Right. And if you're going to lie about that, you would launch and then rug a meme coin. You wouldn't launch
exactly
a project
that's why
that you would
I
invest
thought it was.
In.
I thought, okay, this is Lazarus Group or something like this. And like, this is kind of a, you know, they spun up a website. This is not real. They've hacked Magic Eden's account. It's really hard to unbundle what's going on. It says, what's interesting about this spaghetti mess here is I do actually think Trump has some legitimate projects here. I keep hearing that the World Liberty Financial team is like a pretty solid team.
Yeah.
They're building a treasury of crypto assets. Like they're doing DeFi protocol.
They haven't gotten hacked or exploited or anything. Haven't lost any money.
That could actually be something. And then you have other areas, which is like the Trump meme coin and like whatever that is. And then you have the Trump wallet. And you have Melania coin, whatever that is. And then there was also, you mentioned it earlier in the episode, Trump Media, which they're the Truth Social parent company, I believe, if I'm understanding this correctly. They are rolling out a Bitcoin ETF as well. So they're registering for a Bitcoin ETF, which a Bitcoin ETF product is, you know, legitimate as well. So what do you make of all this?
You know, you said the World Liberty Financial is legitimate. I'm going to the worldlibertyfinancial.com place because, like, you know, it's supposed to be an app. It's supposed to be like an Obvious fork.
Yeah.
There's just a token sale website.
I keep hearing that, like, people telling me that there's, like, a team. They're kind of, like, crypto legit. You know, I don't know.
I've heard that, too. And I was like, okay, can I go get yield in this? And turns out you can just buy WLFI.
Yeah.
Anyways, what do I make of all this? Trump is a franchise. You know, like, I feel like there was that guy behind Elvis, like Elvis's promoter, who just franchised the F out of Elvis and sold everything Elvis branded and made Elvis like a bajillionaire. Yeah. I feel like that's just what's happening. And they're just realizing that with crypto, you can do a crypto, you can do a Bitcoin ETF.
So
you can
profitable.
Launch meme coins. You can launch NFTs. You just can launch
things.
A DeFi app. Just do everything.
He's literally doing all the things.
Doing a wallet. Yeah, just like make every business possible, put Trump's name on it, and sell.
See what happens.
And then, like, yeah, just like one corner made the wallet before a different corner who also had another idea. Because, like, the other part of this is that Donald Trump Jr. said, like, no, we're making a wallet out of World Liberty Financial. And so you have competing Trump products, and they're both wallets, and one's coming from the meme coin, and one's coming from World Liberty. You just don't know what's going on.
Do you know, so the Clarity Act is, you know, being presented in front of the House these days. And this is the new market structure bill. Right, yeah. Okay, this is the new market structure bill. It's the successor to FIT21. You guys have heard us talk about this, right? This is defining what's a security and what's a commodity in crypto. We need this bill. And there's congressional hearings going on this week, and it keeps coming up. Maxine Waters, of course, you know, talking about the Trump coin, all of, you know, the Trump's activities in this. It's coming up. And in fact, I don't know if you saw this clip, a CNBC interview clip with Donald Trump Jr., and the interviewer asks him specifically about the meme coin. This is the clip.
Lead into some of the other things. The meme coin. Is that okay for your dad to have a meme coin?
I think, of course, when he did that before he was in office, he did these things. The reason we got into crypto, and we're all in on crypto, and we're doing American Bitcoin, and we have World Liberty Finance, and USD1 was because there was a time, and probably I'd been on this show, where there was I could call any single banker in New York City. They'd pick up the phone. I'd be able to get a loan for whatever real estate project I was doing across the street. Then we got into politics, and all of a sudden, they wouldn't take your call. Right. You couldn't get financing. We were debanked. And what I realized, and my brother realized, because we were the recipients of every subpoena imaginable, was that, you know what? We were actually just the top of this sort of pyramid scheme that we didn't realize we were a part of, that the financial system was totally undemocratized because we had a certain balance sheet and whatever. We could kind of do whatever we wanted. The regular guy was messed up. Now we were all of a sudden in the shoes of the regular guy that wouldn't be able to take advantage of the markets. And we said, what's the solution for that? The answer is crypto.
And a meme coin.
Masterful. why did you launch a meme coin? Well, let me tell you about this one time we got debanked.
He's not wrong about that, though. We got forced into crypto.
Yeah. And, you know, we needed crypto. And so, never mind. I don't think he said meme coin once in that. Oh, my God. A complete masterpiece.
It is funny. David, let's talk about Sam Bankman-Fried headed to Netflix. What are we getting here, David?
Apparently, they're getting a one-season series on SBF and the fall of FTX. Which I am just waiting on the edge of my seat for as a big TV person.
This is not a documentary. This is an actual kind of, I don't know.
I remember like The Social Network. I think it's something like that where it's like a documentary, but with acting and a story.
It's a true story of what like
happened.
The altruists is what they're calling this.
A huge just punch to the face of effective altruism.
Yeah.
I think that has to have a big overarching story. They're going to name it that. Okay. The actors portraying the people as we know them, Anthony Boyle, who I'm not a movie person, and then also Julia Garner. And these two individuals, I would say, are pretty. They are beautiful people. And crypto Twitter was not happy about that fact.
Did you not resemble the real characters? The contrast
between the beauty of these actors and what we know SBF and Caroline to be was not what people wanted. Because I think people want to make fun of Sam and Caroline.
Yeah, they got hurt pretty bad, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Look at this one. So here's one. Bella Ramsey is what others were saying, and Jonah Hill. I feel like Jonah Hill as Sam Bankman-Fried is kind of perfect, though.
But I love Jonah Hill is the problem with that.
You like him too much?
Yeah. I like him too much. Yeah. He's too good.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, it's unfortunate. Like, if you're an upstarting young actor, like, do you really want your first role to be Sam Bankman-Fried?
I don't know. That could be a fun role to play.
Yeah,
He's such a character. You know what? I hope he goes on a crypto podcast in the series.
In the series? Yeah. Do you think the Eric Voorhees Twitter episode will be in there?
Which means there could be someone playing you, David. There could be someone playing me.
Oh, no. I'm not. I don't want that.
You don't want that.
I don't want
that. But if you had to pick someone to play you, who would it be?
Oh, my doppelganger, which is, what's his face? Tobey Maguire.
Oh, Tobey Maguire would make a perfect David Hoffman.
Yeah, yeah. People have always called me Spider-Man, yeah.
Who would I be then?
Who is your
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. That's who I'd want to play me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd make a good Ryan Sean Adams.
He's not as attractive as you, but yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. David, we're looking for some talent as we wrap this show up. So we got some jobs. If you're interested in a job, what do we got?
We got two very big jobs. These are not entry-level jobs. We are looking for a BD sales lead. So if you are in the BD sales ecosystem of crypto, you know every single company that's in crypto. You have contacts. You have a Rolodex. We are looking for you to do sales for Bankless, mainly sponsorship sales. And so if you are interested in that, there is a link in the show notes so you can apply. And then we are also looking for a growth manager. So somebody who understands podcasting, understands YouTubing, clips, distribution, virality. We have Bankless, but also Limitless, our second podcast, which is doing very well, penetrating into AI and frontier tech. And we need to step on the gas on that. And so scale. If you would like to add fuel on top of a very hot fire, we have a killer podcast AV production team. We have me and Ryan as guests, and
Joseph
Gordon-Levitt, and we have access to some of the best guests that are coming on both Limitless and Bankless. So if you would like to add fuel to that fire, either on sales or on distribution and virality, click the links in the show notes to apply.
Amazing. And because we didn't get a chance to see it, actually Ethereum was mentioned in Congress today in a congressional hearing. So I feel like we should play that as the moment of Zen. This is Vivek from Etherealize. He's coming on next week, actually. They're dropping some big things, but we'll play that clip after I read this. Of course, you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us in the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
BlackRock, Franklin Templeton, Fidelity, Deutsche Bank, UBS, and many more are already building on Ethereum, because it is the most secure and most decentralized settlement layer in the world. As a result, $140 billion of stablecoins, $10 billion of real useful tokenized assets, and institutional-grade financial applications live on Ethereum.